It is 3 days after the events which are about to be described, so a Tuesday. Most of the citizens of Nazareth are crowded into the village synagogue. The whitewashed inner walls are quiet, unnaturally so. On the left-hand side, as usual, sit all the men of the town, seated in their accustomed positions, mostly based on their economic social status. On the right are the women and the small children. Boys who are old enough are allowed to cross the aisle to join their fathers. Noticeably absent, though pointedly so, because they've been excluded from the head man's invitation, are the mother, brothers, and sisters of the carpenter Jesus. Presumably they are sitting at home now, worried. Because this gathering is going to be something like an inquest, a fact-finding assembly, a putting on the record of what actually happened upon this last Sabbath. All of Nazareth has been abuzz with it these 3 days. The leader of the synagogue wants to clear the air and take down the facts for posterity. The whole meeting takes about 45 minutes. This gathering and its discussion, most of them had all been there and seen exactly the same thing, so there was very little controversy. Therefore, in that clinical way in which we people like to formulate reports and get them down on paper, I'll share with you, perhaps, what they might have recorded on a Tuesday like that. I'll read to you. It is noted that, at an interval of months before the Sabbath in question, our local carpenter, Jesus, son of Joseph, disappeared from our town, destination unknown. It is said that he completed all his work orders before departing. Reports were then received that he had joined the groups who went to the Jordan to listen to John, called the Baptizer. His mother and siblings claimed, at the time, that they did not know his whereabouts. In the ensuing months, there were rumors that he was traveling, teaching, some said performing miracles. It is entered into the record that he had received no special training for such, that he had no credentials for these actions. On the Sabbath last, our congregants report that they assembled here as per usual. It was noted by many that the carpenter had returned, was seated in the rear seats, and was accompanied by a number of unknown young men. Our leader, Mattathias, on seeing him there, and still needing a reader and speaker for that day's meeting, made the choice to choose the carpenter, Jesus. The carpenter came to the front and read the following from the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to send out the broken in deliverance, to herald the year of the Lord's favor, his jubilee. All state that he then took his seat upon the teacher's chair and then said simply, "Today this word is fulfilled in your hearing." Everyone present agreed on the following: that the look of the carpenter in saying this had a startling impression upon mind and spirit, that he, the carpenter, seemed to be totally in earnest, that his proceeding to teach and to interpret the scripture was unnerving, given the way he looked into the eyes of all, that, within only a very few minutes, a sense of offense began to strike the congregation. Nearly all agreed at the thought which then occurred to them. Is this not only Joseph's son? Some even began to look and point toward the carpenter's mother, brothers, and sisters to remind themselves of the unseemliness of the carpenter's words and teachings. All report that he then stopped speaking. All remember how he gazed out, silent, regarding all their faces. Then began what can only be called a tirade of indignation. Everyone assembled remembered his words to be something like these: "I assure you that no prophet is ever welcomed in his own country. I tell you the plain fact that in Elijah's time, when the heavens were shut up for 3.5 years and there was a great famine through the whole country, there were plenty of widows in Israel, but Elijah was not sent to any of them. But he was sent to Sarepta, to a widow in the country of Sidon. In the time of Elisha the prophet, there were a great many lepers in Israel, but not one of them was healed, only Naaman the Syrian. We now arrive at the main subject of these last 3 days, controversy. It is agreed by all that these words being too much, far outside of the scope of reason, it was time to end the carpenters so speaking. It was the men at the front who went forward first. They seized the carpenter, who was quickly surrounded by all the other men, the women and children beginning to cry out, the friends of the carpenter running outside ahead of the congregation. And then the whole group began making its way to the brow of the cliff to the east of the synagogue too, and this is noted for the record, throw the carpenter down to his death. The following is also agreed on by all, that the carpenter's words were offensive to the spirit of the community and its faithfulness, that the countenance of the man was unsettling again in the extreme, that his earlier words regarding fulfillment of those ancient words felt blasphemous, that the congregation was warranted in its belief that the man deserved to die. Let all this be noted. Lastly, it was upon the brow of the cliff, in the midst of all the noise and movements and outcries of our people, that the congregants noticed that the carpenter was no longer in their midst. It is presumed that he'd somehow slipped away as the crowd moved eastward. It is hereby agreed that the carpenter is no longer welcome in Nazareth, and it is our intention to send a communique to all the synagogues of the Galilee, warning of his dangerous potential influence. Additionally, upon the upcoming circuit journeyings of members of the Sanhedrin, we will also report these events to them. This document likewise will be copied and handed over forthwith. May God, in his holiness, approve our actions this day. Signed, all present, the Synagogue of the Nazarenes. Now, before I transition into what I want to talk about with that, I would just encourage you, as I sometimes do, I would love to hear from you. What is striking to you as you hear those events from Luke 4 in such a straightforward, clinical, maybe sort of firsthand observant way, but from the other side of viewing things? I would love to hear from you. So if you have a moment, drop me a text or an email. But some of you, if you listen to the podcast with any consistency, you might recall that I actually did share from this Luke passage last summer. And I have to say, I was continually arrested this week by the very same moment from this narrative, his speaking and his obvious fulfillment of those words from Isaiah 61. Yes, it is significant that he's speaking in his hometown synagogue. Yes, the people's initial reaction and subsequent actions are absolutely fascinating and wild. Yes, it is wonderfully mysterious that he somehow slips away from their collective grasp. All of that matters. But to me, all of it is also absolutely secondary to the glorious, heavenly coincidental timing of his going forward to read and then reading these words. I'll read them to you again. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to send out the broken in deliverance, to herald the year of the Lord's favor, his jubilee. As you know, I am fascinated by words, by meaning, and by how words in their meaning are meant to stiffen our minds, to continually be teaching our hearts, in a way, to be sending us forth in the very spirit of Jesus. So, what has Jesus just said? What has he meant about the reality of the fulfillment that was occurring on that day in that synagogue? Well, that the very Spirit of God is upon him, within him, has been poured out over him, anointed him, unto a purpose, which is, well, the speaking to the poor, the outsiders of the good news, the gospel, which is freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind, the sending out of the broken in deliverance for deliverance, which is to know the one who is not only herald for the jubilee of the Lord, the abolishing of all debts, not just the deliverer of the broken, not only the sight giver to the blind, the freer of the prisoners, the preacher of all preachers. Friends, our deliverance is knowing the very one who is the gospel himself, the anointed one, the Christ, the bearer of the very Spirit. Do you see how, just as always, it all wraps back into the person of Jesus? The fulfillment he speaks of is not his actions. The fulfillment of Isaiah's words is he himself. So where am I going with this? Well, here. If Jesus is the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy by going forward to back through those words, well, I'll tell you, we experience the glory of our call by sort of going back to front. Because if we receive the freedom of this heavenly jubilee in Jesus, we will go out in our deliverance to deliver others. And in our going forth with the deliverance of Jesus, we will find our eyes opened to the reality of what it means to be alive in him. Then, with eyes wide open, we will watch his working through us to free others. We will see the way the good news is truly good in the hearts of humans. And in all of this, the very Spirit of Jesus will just keep cascading through our lives until, friends, complete possession becomes our normalcy. I mean, doesn't this all sound quite wonderful? Positively thrilling? Well, again, where would all that start? What was the ending from Isaiah where I just said to you that it really kicks off? Jubilee. That complete freedom from all debts. That is the spirit of Jubilee. And frankly, I know my audience well enough to know there might be some of you, I can almost anticipate, who have the question in their minds, but what if it doesn't feel like I'm free like that? Like it's a complete setting free from debt. I mean, let's be honest, were you maybe starting to think that a little bit? Well, my friend, feeling free matters very little compared to the reality of being free. If I can give you a familiar picture, a familiar construct, it's a little like marriage, being married. I don't wake up in the morning always expecting to feel all the feels, as the cool kids say, though let's be honest, I am married to Jenny, so it's awfully hard not to be swept away continually. But regardless of any particular way I may be feeling or not feeling on any given day, I am indeed very much married, which again is pure delight because of, well, Jenny. Think about that. Think about this, friends. We are free, not because we always have an inward sensation of freedom's euphoria. We are free because we have been made free by Jesus. The simplest way to put it to you as the starting point for all the call that we are called to is this. The Jubilee has already been happening with or without us. Today, will we simply join in? Thanks for listening.